Welcome to this episode in the Sabbatical 101 live coaching series, where I bring you behind the scenes of a real sabbatical strategy session with academics from across disciplines. These live coaching sessions give you insight into the questions and worries fellow academics have about their sabbaticals and the practical strategies and mindset shifts that go into planning a life-changing sabbatical. Whether you're dreaming of your first sabbatical or you're in the midst of planning one, I hope these candid conversations will help normalize concerns and challenges around sabbatical planning, provide you with some practical ways forward, and help you get inspired to make the most of your sabbatical.
Welcome to Sabbatical 101. My name is Bethany Walensky, and I'm an associate professor at Michigan State University. I had a life-changing sabbatical, and I'm on a mission to help fellow academics do the same. This podcast is a resource for all things academic sabbaticals. Each episode will provide you with inspiration and insight into the sabbatical planning process, regardless of your institution, discipline, length of sabbatical, or where you plan to sabbatical. I'm so excited to have you along for the ride.
My guest for this week's live coaching session is Caitlin Clinton. Caitlin is an associate professor of writing and rhetoric in the English department at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. Caitlin's research focuses on trauma in writing programs and classrooms. As a multiple-time gun violence survivor, Caitlin is particularly interested in how college educators, students, and institutions respond to and recover from campus shootings. Her current project is a monograph on the rhetoric of mass gun violence memorials in the United States. Caitlin is currently on a year-long sabbatical. When we recorded this conversation in May, she was worried about how to structure her time during sabbatical in order to accomplish her goal to move her new book project forward. On the one hand, Caitlin was concerned that if she worked too hard and set unrealistic expectations for the project, she'd burn herself out during sabbatical. On the other hand, she was anxious about reaching the end of her sabbatical, feeling like she didn't have enough to show for her time. As we talked through these concerns and others, there were two really interesting things that emerged. The first was that most of Caitlin's sabbatical is not going to be spent writing. The book project is situated in a new discipline for Caitlin and requires fieldwork, so we talked about how the sabbatical year is really about learning new literatures, methods, and writing genres. In other words, the sabbatical will set the stage for the writing that will follow, but Caitlin realized that she needed to reset her expectations about what she's likely to produce during her sabbatical. The second thing that came up was related to the framing of the sabbatical. Caitlin came to the call worried about all the ways her sabbatical might not live up to her expectations of her own productivity. What she came to realize during our conversation was that the sabbatical is actually not high stakes, and that reframing it as a unique opportunity to lean into a new field and research area shifted the way she was thinking about her sabbatical and how she's thinking about measuring its success. I hope you enjoy this candid conversation and that you find something in it that resonates with you and perhaps gives you a way forward for your own sabbatical planning. Hi, Caitlin. Thanks so much for being on Sabbatical 101 today.
Thank you for having me.
So I'm really excited to dig in and hear more about your upcoming sabbatical. But before we do that, could you introduce yourself and tell our listeners a little bit more about where you are and what you study?
Sure. So I'm Caitlin Clinton, and I'm an associate professor of English. I specialize in writing and rhetoric at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas. And I've been here since 2017. So my specialty has been writing program administration. I ran the first year writing program all when I was pre-tenure and then a few years into my promoted status. And so my research has really been on higher education pedagogy, specifically how we teach writing. But my more recent research has been on trauma, specifically in writing classrooms and that writing instructors have experienced, writing instructors in K through college contexts. I have experienced campus shootings or campus violence at every institution where I have learned or taught myself. And so that has kind of set the stage for my sabbatical project coming up, which is a monograph on the rhetoric of mass gun violence memorials in the United States.
Unfortunately, so relevant, and it sounds like really hard work, but important work to be doing.
Yes. And that's, you know, part of the struggle thinking about a sabbatical is how I do this really emotional work at a time when I am going to be now more isolated by choice.
Yeah. So maybe one of the questions that's coming up for you is just creating community, or how you have a community while you're on sabbatical that still allows you. I think what many people are looking for on their sabbatical is to get out of the day-to-day of the department, but how do you not become totally isolated at the same time?
Exactly.
Okay. And my final question before I ask you more about your sabbatical is, our sabbaticals are never just about us and our research. They have implications for people in our ecosystem and particularly our immediate family. So would you mind just saying a little bit about who your people are during your sabbatical?
Sure. So I have a very supportive non-academic husband, and then we have a 5-year-old daughter who's going to be going into kindergarten in the fall, and we have an ornery old cat.
Okay, how do you think the cat's going to feel about your sabbatical?
Well, my husband works from home, so she will probably just be very confused as to why there are more people, double the people at home.
Right, invading her space, probably.
Exactly.
And then your daughter, did you say daughter?
Mm-hmm.
We'll be having a big transition next year into kindergarten, right?
Yes. I mean, she's been in school this past year, but that had been one of the considerations for, as I was thinking about my sabbatical and applying for fellowships, it just was, what do we do when it comes to school for her at such a big moment, and about school choice? And it just, it was a complicating factor that never actually became a factor because I never got any of the fellowships that I applied for, unfortunately, but it just added a lot of stress to the planning.
Okay. So as you think about your upcoming sabbatical, what would you say is your greatest desire for the sabbatical? Or if you had to complete the sentence, I'll know my sabbatical was a success because, what would you say?
I want it to be sustainably productive, where I feel good about the work that I have accomplished. I don't want to feel like I have wasted this year, because with the current state of everything, who knows, this might be the only time I get to have a sabbatical. I delayed taking a sabbatical after I was eligible. Everyone kept telling me like, oh, take a sabbatical. I wasn't eligible after I got tenure because I got tenure a year early. And then I just kept putting it off because I wanted to have a project that felt really worthwhile and that I would be able to devote myself to a year's worth of work on it. And so whereas like a lot of my friends who took sabbatical immediately after getting tenure, I feel like they just used it as this really necessary, almost fallow period because they had to recover from the stress of tenure. Had stepped down from an administrative appointment. And so just even stepping down from a full-time admin role into a typical faculty role had felt really rejuvenating, and like it refreshed me for my research and allowed me to come up with this idea for a project that then was, you know, what I eventually wrote my sabbatical application for and what I'll be doing on sabbatical. Because I don't feel like I need as much restoration, I really want to make good progress on this book. And that includes doing some field work, some road trips around the country, and writing.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I don't want to do that in a way that it burns me out. And then I come back from sabbatical and I have another 6 years before I'm eligible again, and I'm already burnt out at the beginning of it. So I want to balance this. The work that I'm doing, I'm so motivated by and that I want to do, and I'm in that space right now, but then also not burning myself out in the process for it.
Yeah, that makes sense. So a good sabbatical would look like, is the plan to have the monograph written? Is the plan to have it researched? Like what's the timeline in your mind for the monograph?
I don't think it's realistic to say that I'm going to write a book in the next year. I'm in the humanities, so we are publishing moves pretty slowly, and I have never written a book before. So I know that there's going to be a learning curve with that. And since I do have to conduct a lot of the research, archival research and site visits, so I'm trying to almost set intentionally lower expectations for myself, because I could easily say, I'm going to write a first draft of this monograph and get a book proposal out. And that's probably just not realistic. So instead, I want to be able to conduct all of my field work and have all of the stuff, and then ideally write 3 chapters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it sounds like the sabbatical is about having the time and space to do the field work, conceptualize the book, write the first couple chapters, and so maybe you're on the way to writing the proposal that you would submit to publishers?
Mm-hmm. Yes. And as you know, I mentioned I had applied for several fellowships. And so as part of that, I had to do a lot of the conceptual work for the book project. So I have a sense of what I want this to look like. It's not like I'm going in like, I'm going to write a book and I have no idea what the outline is right now. And so I am pretty specific about the field work that I need to do and the archival work that I need to do. But I also know that once I do that work, it's probably going to radically shift the book structure.
Yeah, it's always an iterative process, right? And it should be, because it means that you're learning as you do the field work.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so making progress on the book and not getting burned out in the process. So figuring out, you mentioned that this is your first book. So part of it is you have this amazing opportunity on sabbatical to work on this book, but there's a worry that you might go so hard that you're not burned out now. You might end up burned out by the end of the sabbatical, which seems counterintuitive and would not be a great place to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as I've been talking to people about, you know, the project specifically, because so it's about mass gun violence memorials in the United States. And so I have personal connections to, you know, several places that have, you know, had mass gun violence events. And so folks that I've talked to about it have been asking me like, oh, well, this seems like a really emotionally heavy topic. Like, how are you going to do this? And for me, this book feels a little bit easier than the book that I initially thought I was going to write, which was going to be about higher education after campus gun violence. And that one felt too recent. It felt too much for me to do.
Yeah.
This book about memorials felt a little bit more like at arm's length. And so I could do this work, but I also know that when I get into it, it could be really emotionally heavy. And I'm going to have to be doing some road trips, traveling across the country, and I'll probably be by myself doing that work. And so I just can't anticipate at this point the emotional weight that this is going to take, the emotional labor that it's going to take for me to work on this project sustained for a year.
Yeah. So it's not just the work itself, but it's also maybe building in time. I can imagine you have these cycles of field work where there's some sort of preparation, then you're doing the field work, but then you'll need some processing or decompression or another not research related activity to help you not stay in that heavy emotional state for too long, or help you process the field work that you've done.
Exactly.
So as you think about the upcoming year, the sabbatical, and we've talked a little bit about some of the challenges you anticipate, are there any other challenges that you're anticipating? Maybe you can see this vision of yourself at the end of sabbatical and you're like, I've made all this progress. I did field work. I have this book proposal ready to go. What right now is standing between you and that outcome?
Well, I guess just one of the other challenges, you know, on the one hand, I'm worried about burning myself out. And at the other end, I'm worried about like wasting this entire year. Because I've recently been diagnosed with ADHD. So the idea of having a year without the structure of my service obligations and my teaching and deadlines from, you know, articles or different things like that, just like the rhythm of publishing and now taking on this kind of solo project, a solo long-term project. That's also, so I feel like I've got these two extremes that I'm worried about, that, you know, come end of June next year, I'm going to say I did too much or I did too little.
Yeah. Do you have any examples of times in the past when you've had this unstructured time? Maybe if you're on a 9-month contract over the summer, what have you done in the past when you have some unstructured time and you need to get something done?
So I have always done, you know, articles and like book chapters and things. And so, and a lot of times I'll write for special issues or for calls for papers that have, you know, a pretty short deadline. Everything has to be done within this time period. And I can make deadlines.
Mm-hmm.
They are imposed by somebody else. But then when, you know, a project like this, where it's, well, the book proposal is due whenever I submit it.
Mm-hmm.
Or if I set deadlines for myself, then those are the ones that are easiest to push back because I know that they're fake deadlines. And so really the only thing keeping me from this book being published is me and my deadlines and lack of prioritizing them. And in the past, it's also been okay, well, I can prioritize, I'll prioritize other people. I'll prioritize my teaching. You know, my students need feedback. This person needs a letter recommendation. There's this service project. But I also had, you know, tenure breathing down my neck. I had other stuff. Mm-hmm. So I knew I had to prioritize these things. Now I don't have any of that. I don't have like the pressure of, you know, I have to go up for full in this amount of time. Like I'm already on track. Like the book is the extra thing. Like I don't need the book to get full because of the articles and book chapters I've published. So I guess that's just, maybe I need somebody on the outside to say, okay, well, here's your deadline for this. But then I also don't know what's a realistic deadline to set for myself at this point, because I haven't done this before and I have to do the field work too.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it sounds like they're really, you know, you started out by talking about a book project, but there are really multiple steps within this, right? Because you have multiple field sites. Do you know how many field sites you have?
I hate to say it's unfortunately changing, but I'm planning on at this point, probably 10.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So this is, that's a pretty extensive amount of field work, right? Mm-hmm. Okay. So one thing that I could imagine being helpful is even doing some mapping out of that field work. Like what does field work mean, right? What are the tasks involved in setting it up? Even the logistics, which I imagine, you know, looking at your daughter's school calendar and figuring out when can you be away? Like, because once we put the school breaks and the holidays and things in, time can get a little shorter. So there might be an initial mapping of those sites and saying like, and geographically mapping too. How long do I need for each site? How long will it take to get there? And how much time will I need once I'm there? And then also once I'm done to kind of process whatever data or reflections you have. So I wonder, have you done any of that yet? Like thinking about what it looks like to do field work in each site?
I've started to, and that's a conversation, you know, that my husband and I have been having about just how much time can I be gone at one time? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, like many academic families, like we don't have any family here. It's just us and a great community of people. But, you know, that doesn't mean that I would feel comfortable going away for like a full month. And I would miss my family, especially with this work. I worry about being too far removed from the people who keep me grounded and happy and that I love.
Mm-hmm.
And so that just kind of makes it difficult. I'm kind of imagining two separate road trips at this point, one through the Mountain West gun violence memorials, and then one on the East Coast. But then I'm also waiting for some of these memorials are going to open for the first time, and they don't necessarily have a solid opening date yet. Mm-hmm. And so it makes it difficult to plan at least for some of them.
Sure. So there's necessarily going to need to be some room for iteration and some flexibility. It would be unrealistic to have a very firm schedule, although it sounds like you do need to have some good sense of what of how long you'll be away and which stretches of time so you can arrange, you know, childcare or whatever you guys need to fill in the gaps of you not being there.
Mm-hmm.
So are you envisioning that most of the field work would happen in the fall and then there would be writing in the spring? Or are you imagining field work and writing kind of coexisting?
Goal would be to get the field work done as early in the fall as possible, just because, you know, I will be driving. I don't really want to be driving through mountains really anytime after October.
Understandably.
But I also recognize that I will probably start writing, because one of the chapters I'm envisioning is about the process of the negotiations that go into the community deliberation around these memorials. And so a lot of that is archival work that I can access online from anywhere. And so I was thinking that I could be working on that while I'm thinking about these or conducting these site visits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And then in terms of what typically works for you as a researcher and a writer, what are the kinds of patterns that, like, if you do have a time set aside to write, how does that usually look for you?
How do I usually write? Normally I write in binges. And this is such a different project for me too, because, you know, as I mentioned, I do mostly like writing pedagogy. And so it would be like, I would have assessment data that I would be writing up and working with. And so this is, it's a new research methodology for me, mm-hmm. and kind of a new field of scholarship, and actually it's very interdisciplinary field of scholarships that I'm now trying to learn more about as I'm situating my project within it. So again, it kind of feels like I have to learn new processes because, again, it's this long-term project, but it's a radically different sort of project for me.
Yeah. So there's also an element of learning new genres, new disciplines, right? So this is not a, oh, I've done this before and I kind of know my process. So I'm just, as I'm like visualizing your year, I'm seeing all of these elements play out. And I think you had said a few minutes ago that you were trying to keep low expectations and not in a negative way, but I think it sounds like you're worried about having overly high expectations. And then that can just feel very deflating if you're not living up to them.
Yes, I think, you know, like many academics, I am a type A perfectionist overachiever. And so having learned that about myself, it's just better to, you know, reset whatever I think my expectations could be or what bar I could set for myself. Because again, I don't have like the pressure of time or promotion, you know, that requires this. And so I want to do it right. And I want to do it in a way that is healthy and sustainable for me and my family.
Right. Especially because, like you said, this is a long-term project. So this is going to extend beyond the life of the sabbatical. And so it sounds like viewing the sabbatical as this really unique opportunity to dig in, to continually remind yourself that you're learning a lot of new things too. I think sometimes we forget that even as someone with a PhD who's been in this business for a while, you know, it's hard to learn new things and it might take time longer than you think just because you're steeping yourself in a different literature, you're learning a new methodology, figuring out a new genre. I think it probably will take a little longer, but what a great thing that you have sabbatical to have this time of experimentation and learning.
I think that's a great way to frame it. And probably helpful for me that, you know, I think I was feeling a lot of pressure that I need to be, you know, halfway through the book manuscript at the end of this sabbatical to have something to show for it. But that a lot of what I'll have to be doing this sabbatical is building the foundation so that I'll be able to write the book later on. You know, I guess I've been studying my field for a decade at this point. So I know the literature that I cite all the time. I can explain these theoretical concepts that I'm using. And now I have to learn those theoretical concepts. I have to think about my methodology. I have to conduct the field work, obviously. So with all of that, like I have to spend the time doing that. And there might not be something at the end that I have to show for it in the same way, but it'll allow me to make better use of my time when I do return from sabbatical so that I can finish the book.
Yeah. So you might not have those three chapters, right? You might have field notes and memos, or, you know, I'm making things up because I'm not quite sure what your research entails, but it could be that you've made a lot of progress intellectually in terms of your understanding and in terms of the field work, but you don't have the polished writing. I think there's a tendency with sabbaticals to feel like I have to have something to show for it and it has to be a published or written thing. But I also think there's a lot to be said for spending time thinking and reflecting and engaging with the field that, you know, with this new discipline, right? I think so often we're so hard on ourselves, but what would you say to a doctoral student who is in the same situation? Because it's kind of like coming in as a, maybe you're a third year doctoral student or something, or maybe even second year. And sometimes my first and second year students, they're like, should I be doing more? And I'm like, no, your job right now is to learn and think and see what's coming up for you as you're engaging with new ideas and new literatures.
No, that's great. I had been thinking about, like, I have to make a syllabus for myself. I have to make a reading list for all the things that I want to read, because right now I've been doing haphazard research and finding things, and there's way too many folders on my desktop sort of thing. Putting it down and saying that this is worth the time on sabbatical to read through and to really think through.
Yeah. And so I know that you said you don't feel like there's an urgent need for rest, but I can imagine this sort of resting light period, or where you're allowing yourself to just read and learn new things, which I think can be often when we're in our day-to-day lives as academics, you know, I'm like, okay, let me read this really quickly so I can plug it into the lit review, right? I don't know, maybe you are, but I'm not reading in that kind of like, let me really try to deeply engage and learn this. And so that could be a rewarding thing to do on sabbatical.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's also a good pairing with the field work, because if the field work is as emotionally heavy as I, you know, think it may be, then reading other people's work would be easier for me, because I will have the space for that. I will not have the space to probably be writing and processing beyond like my field notes at that point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and maybe some journaling or voice memos to do some of the processing of your own emotions in relation to the field work. I'm thinking a little bit about this concern about feeling isolated. And I'm wondering if there are other communities of scholars who are doing this kind of work that you could plug into during your sabbatical. I wonder if building a network with scholars in the same area could be a useful way to feel engaged with a community during sabbatical.
Yeah, I think definitely I could do that. And because I'm entering this new area for me, and working with people outside of the academy, as I'm looking at the different memorials, I've found that I have to put myself out there more and just cold email people. And so far, everyone has been great about it. You know, people who I've been reading their books and I just email them and I feel like such a fangirl. I'm like, this was really helpful. And, you know, they seem to be really responsive to that. And so I think I just have to do that more intentionally. And as I've been thinking about the field work that I'll be doing and being on the road for a few weeks at a time, thinking about like, where do I have friends or colleagues that I can maybe meet with, maybe sleep on their couch.
Yeah. I think it would be a nice element to these kind of heavy trips. If you were able to visit with a friend or a family member you don't get to see often, but again, it also takes advantage of this unique moment of sabbatical. You know, you have more flexibility. You don't have to get back to teach your class, or you don't have this deadline looming. So I think the more you can find ways to lean into that, for my clients, one element of a really great sabbatical is that it feels different from your day to day, that it's giving you a different rhythm, a different routine. I think you're naturally going to have that because of these fieldwork trips. And it would be nice if you could build into those trips opportunities for things that feed your soul in some way, maybe going to visit a random site, or, you know, go for a hike in a place that you've wanted to visit, you know, so it doesn't all have to be only about the field work.
Oh, I will definitely be finding all of the vegetarian and vegan restaurants like in the middle of the country.
There you go. That's awesome. So yeah, you can have these personal goals that are a little bit lighter, balance the heaviness of the work that you're doing. And then the other thing I was wondering about is, we talked a little bit about the structure and the scheduling and how do you kind of create a balance between, you don't want to work so hard that you get burned out, but also what if you don't do anything at all? I think that the field work is going to give you a natural structure, right? You're not just sitting home every day saying like, what am I going to do today? But I wonder about an accountability buddy, or some sort of a, like, if you have another friend or colleague who will be on sabbatical at the same time and sort of having a writing group or check-ins or something to kind of hold each other accountable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been thinking about, you know, the different, you know, sort of Facebook groups, the professional Facebook groups that I'm in, you know, checking to see if anybody else would be interested in sabbatical accountability group or first book accountability group, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I think that could be really helpful. And there are also some things that when you think about that plan for writing, I mean, it sounds like where we're coming to in this conversation is that actually the writing might not be a big part of the sabbatical. The bigger part of the sabbatical might be the field work and the reading, but then there is going to be processing field notes, or, you know, processing, like, how are you going to keep track of the literature and stuff like that? So maybe there is a loose structure you put in place for yourself that can be modified as you go based on how field work is going and what you're learning. But there could be some milestones that you set for yourself, and then having a group or a person who can help hold you accountable So that would be really valuable, I think.
Yeah, I think the accountability is going to be key because, as I mentioned, you know, now that I have been, you know, diagnosed with ADHD, I recognize that like my strength is in the initial stage. I can plan with the best of them. But then when it's me on my own, you know, I can say like, I'm going to, you know, give feedback on 5 student papers. And if I do that every day, and yet I'm still here giving feedback on 50 papers in one day. And so I think that having that sort of accountability from somebody else when I'm actually in this, because aside from the logistics of the field work where like that is set in stone and that's something I can't deviate from, these other aspects where it's just on me, like I will have trouble adhering to the great plan and structure that I put in place.
Yeah. And I think it's very motivating when we have to report what we've done, right? So having someone who's going to ask you on Friday, oh, what did you do this week? Did you get to that thing you said you would?
Well, and, you know, again, like I'm fairly new with like my diagnosis and I'm still like learning how like I am, like how, you know, it's kind of forcing me to think about how I have been in the past and, you know, grade or responding to, you know, 50 student papers doesn't interest me as much as this, you know, project that I'm working on. So there could also be this hyper focus that happens. You know, I'm motivated to do this. So maybe the structure won't be as much of a problem because this is what I want to be doing. This is the project that really for the first time I've set for myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I'm learning a lot more about ADHD because actually quite a few of my clients have ADHD and the hyper focus is a thing. And then there's a concern for some clients that they won't be able to stop. So like once I start, what if I can't stop like skipping meals and things?
Yeah, I'm not as worried about the stopping because I have a 5-year-old.
She demands it.
If I don't feed her, she gets pretty hangry. So she lets me know.
Aren't kids great in that way for keeping us in our routines? I think about during the pandemic, friends who didn't have kids who were talking about not having any schedule. And I was like, well, you know, we had a 2-year-old and a 5-year-old and pretty much they keep you on schedule because they still wake up at 6 every morning needing to be fed.
Well, I was living that newborn life. So,
oh my gosh,
everybody was in the newborn phase at that point.
It must have just been a blur.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, you know, with my daughter, it also really helps me set work boundaries because once she comes home, then there's no work that's going to happen. And I like to sleep, so I'm not going to stay up late. I might wake up early, but she's really good at reminding me of the things that I value more than my work.
Yeah, for sure. No, I 100% agree. My son was born when I was writing my dissertation, which I would recommend to no one. but the good thing about starting a tenure track job with a baby in tow is that it really helps you keep your priorities straight. Well, Caitlin, it's been so great to talk about your sabbatical, and I hope that the conversation has yielded some new insights or thinking about how you might approach planning it.
It definitely has. So I think I'm going to be reframing this as I'm not lowering my expectations, but I am shifting them to something that needs to be done and that also isn't going to be as overly ambitious, but will help me get to my end goal, even beyond the sabbatical.
Yeah. And from what you've said, it just sounds like nothing about this is high stakes either. And that's why it made me think this is just such a great opportunity. You've been really successful. You are well positioned going up for full. And now you get to work on this project that you care about a lot. And so what a wonderful opportunity to get to work on it for a year. And I'm confident. I don't know you well, but from what you've said, I feel like you're going to make progress on this project and you're going to be in a great place a year from now to then think about what are the next steps as you move this project forward. Even though it being realistic, it's not going to be done next May, but you will be so much further along after the time you spend on it during sabbatical.
Well, please don't tell my university leave committee that it won't be done, but I agree.
I see those sabbatical applications. It's kind of like a grant application. It's your best thinking in the moment about what you'll accomplish. But I also think that sometimes even just talking through the project in this conversation, it's become clear that there are multiple layers of things that need to get done and that are going to take time if you want to do them well. You might be able to crank out a book in a year, but would it be something that you're proud of? Would it do justice to what you're trying to study?
No, this is my passion project. I want to do it the right way. And by that, I mean like the way that makes me feel as good as I can about it and that I'm really proud of the work that I've done, not just in the book, but, you know, hopefully the larger conversation, you know, about gun violence.
Yeah. And I am sure that when you write your sabbatical report, you'll be able to, you're in writing and rhetoric, so you'll be able to write it in such a way that really captures the work that you've done and the ways the work you have done over your sabbatical will be positioning you for the next step, right? And I think that's what universities care about. It's not as much about, did you do the actual exact thing you said you would, but is this moving your scholarship forward in productive ways? And it sounds like this project absolutely will.
Agreed.
All right. Well, thanks again, Caitlin. It was great to talk.
Thanks, Bethany.
I hope you found this episode of Sabbatical 101 helpful and inspirational as you think about your own sabbatical. If you want to read more about sabbaticals or get even more support for planning your own life-changing sabbatical, head over to my website, www.bethanywalinsky.com, to read my blog and for more information about my sabbatical coaching program.